Does Alaska fly that, or you got to go through Seattle?
You have to go through Seattle for Indianapolis.
You have to go through Seattle, but I have to go home.
Mm, that sounds like a Stephen excuse.
No, because I'm coming to Portland from the data center.
Again, sounds like a Stephen excuse.
Yeah, possibly. but I'm likely to go on this trip.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 592 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller, Mr. Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen.
I was worried there was going to be a third thing added after that. There's an Oxford comma in there, and I wasn't sure who was next.
Oh, yeah. No guests today. We should have more guests, though.
That would involve us, you know, finding guests.
Yes, this is true.
Listeners, any of you want to be a guest, we'd love to have you.
Yes.
I'm in the midst of scheduling one right now.
It's a surprise. We can't talk about it.
My favorite kind of guest.
FIFA planed. Planes. Oh, my God. It's too early in the morning here. FIFA planes. American, Alaska. What's the deal?
World Cup fever, catching the world. It's Alaska and American both have special liveries for the tournament this year. What I found interesting about them is that in the press releases, both of them are announced as in partnership with Qatar Airways.
Well, we don't like soccer here, so.
Well, putting that part aside, the fact that they have to be blessed by Qatar Airways, and Qatar Airways also has a special livery for it, it seems to me like Qatar bought the global airline rights for FIFA, and they're subleasing out individual like opportunities to also be a sponsor somehow and like paint a plane special. I can't prove it, but like that's based on what's happening. It seems to be how airlines are doing it. Like if you want to have an official FIFA livery plane, you have to get Qatar Airways to bless it for you.
So there's subcontracting.
Sub-licensing, whatever.
That seems random. Do you think they're making any money off of that, or do they care?
So far, it's their two One World member partners that are doing it. So I think probably less with the making money, and or at least in a significant way, and more just having fun.
Yeah.
And being nice to their friends. But that was a very interesting bit. But there's also the airlines that are doing stuff that aren't officially licensed.
Like who?
Well, it's like, to me, this sort of goes back to like the whole, like, in the U.S. or the Super Bowl, where people talk about the big game instead of the Super Bowl because there's confusion about licensing and what you are and aren't allowed to do. But like Aerolíneas Argentinas has a 330 painted with their soccer jersey on the tail.
Oh, okay.
And there seems to be a captain's badge on one of the engines, like an armband sort of thing. So that's pretty nifty. Is an Air Algérie has a plane with like the flag and everything else on it that is clearly a World Cup special livery and like designed to sort of match the uniforms, I think, but also doesn't say World Cup anywhere on it.
Doesn't mention FIFA, that kind of thing.
Doesn't mention FIFA. Am I looking this correct? Is it? Ooh, it's nice. It's a new A330 with the New England's.
Are these liveries like Air Algérie and Argentina? Are they flying the team around, or are they like for passenger service?
The Argentinian one was definitely used for the charter that brought the team to Kansas City, which was their base.
Yep.
I don't know what the Air Algérie one was, but it's a, you know, there's some great photos out there of all of them. Some fun stuff going on. It was just the whole, like, is your livery blessed by FIFA and by Qatar Airways as an adjunct FIFA bit is the part I find most amusing.
Yeah, it's interesting. What about fun lines?
So that's the other fun bit is there's the charters that brought all the teams in. So I mentioned the Aerolíneas Argentina flight from Buenos Aires. I think it went from Aeroparque even to Kansas City. So rather rare. Santiago de Compostela to Nashville.
That's fun.
For the Spain national team.
Nice. I like that.
It's the other one that's pretty solid. And even that's a special FIFA World Cup livery, but it's and that one actually, because they're One World, may be blessed by Qatar Airways, but I'm not sure. I haven't seen enough close of it. But
I'm disappointed it wasn't Malila to Kansas City or somewhere.
Nashville's new training base. Yeah, Nashville. But that's another one. That's a 350. It's got special paint job. Good times.
Yeah, we had the Jordanian team is here in Portland, and they came up from San Diego, which I thought was odd. Like, did they fly from Amman to San Diego and then up to, I don't know. I don't know what the story is, but they were apparently in San Diego before they came here. So, yeah, super. I mean, it's pretty cool. It's always fun. And then Flight Radar made some posts, right, about these random lines. They've got a bunch.
Yeah, that's the source of almost all of my useful information for the past 2 months.
That's great. Southwest, Nashville, a lounge?
So apparently they have a permit to put a lounge in Nashville now.
Okay.
Right, there was talk about Hawaii. We saw that one. That was the first one that broke cover. Apparently they have a permit.
So when first class?
This is the United States. We don't care about lounge access for first class passengers.
No, but like, when are they going to put first class in the planes?
This is the United States. I don't care about first class for lounge.
Everyone's equal here, right?
I mean, but that's not to say that Southwest couldn't change that, right? It would really upend the lounge game if they started giving lounge access. And Alaska does for paid first class.
As long as you're on a flight long enough, yes.
And only for paid, yes.
And paid.
Yeah. Apparently this was old news. I didn't see it before, so that's why I'm bringing it up now. But
I mean, Nashville's a huge market for Southwest, and Nashville's growing. I think even with the construction at Nashville, I still feel like that airport's a little bit of a mess. Like with them completing the new terminal. Like it's underbuilt for the amount of traffic it has.
I think that
not enough space or.
But they're still not done, right? They tore down where United, the other side, the A side where United was.
Yep.
And they're now rebuilding that out.
I think that will help for sure, because that's kind of where the international flights depart from and come into, because it was like the only segregated hallway, like out, you know, still secure, but not with regular traffic
I think the international flights now use what the equivalent of the T gates when you walk right in.
Oh, well, how does that work then with arrivals? Did they build arrivals facilities there?
I mean, there might be one or connects, right? I'm not sure, but all the departures I know that I've seen are going out of that area.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I flew there last year, I think, and it was still tight. I think you're right, Foz. The A gates were going to help when it's done. It feels like a very crowded airport.
There's just too many people, but that's like any big airport.
True. And it's like an Austin sized airport, and they still have the remote gates out there on the satellite. And yeah.
So. Well, that's the island of misfit toys.
It's all Legion now since Spirit's gone.
Isn't a Frontier out there?
Are they?
I thought they were.
They might be. You might be right. So. A lounge.
New Pacific didn't get shunted all the way out there when they operated. Just remember that.
I think a lounge, I mean, it kind of makes sense for Southwest at one of its bigger operations. I'm surprised they haven't said anything about Love since it's.
I think that one is also. I think Love is on the list also. It's just not fully.
It hasn't been permitted or whatever. And
yeah,
there's no public visibility of it.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, is this going to be one of those things where you buy access or a pass every now and then?
I mean, if I cared to go in, sure.
I mean, do you think that's how it's going to work? Because they don't offer... I mean, I guess they'll have to have a program, like a lounge access program.
You'll get free access when you spend $75,000 on your Chase Sapphire Reserve.
Oh, yeah.
Or just on your Chase Southwest card.
Or that. No, they'll have a club card for that.
Fair.
But
if you spend $75,000, then you can bring a guest.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe $25,000 for the first guest and $75,000 for the full family.
When you only have two lounges, that might not be a bad trade-off.
I mean, where else would they put one? Midway?
There's not much room in Midway, but yeah.
San Diego, Oakland, Phoenix,
Oakland. Anything they could put in at Oakland, they could put in literally. Anything, and it would be better than the terminal. They could put in a restaurant, and it would be better than the terminal.
They could just put up a wall and more benches, and it would be better than the terminal?
Yeah, exactly. Vegas, probably.
That's another one where I'm not sure about space.
Yeah, especially on their side, yeah.
I mean, there has to be space over there, right? There used to be an America West Lounge. There used to be a 24-hour fitness in that other terminal.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
There was a 24-hour fitness?
There was a 24-hour fitness in McCarran.
I did not know that. Wow. Did it have showers?
I assume so. I never went in.
I would have signed up just for that. That would have been awesome. Seth could have done a little bit of weightlifting before his flight.
Yeah, something to stay awake before the red eye.
Yeah. Starlink and Wiz and El Al.
Yeah, a couple more.
The more people that sign up for Starlink, the more I wonder about Delta's Amazon Leo move.
So we'll get to that in a second. Other interesting bits. Wiz is an ultra low cost carrier that historically has charged for everything that wasn't bolted down, and so. Right, there's that like very public spat between Musk and O'Leary a couple months ago now, I guess, beginning of this year, fighting over who should pay what and how much it costs to put Wi-Fi on a plane and all that stuff. And Wizz Air seems to not care. They're picking up the tab and they're gonna make it work that somehow, they think. That's as an ultra low cost carrier with the unbundled model, choosing to go that route is pretty interesting, especially when you had like Viva Aerobus, or which is now just Viva, but I have a trouble calling them that, in Mexico, is adding Wi-Fi, but they went with SES, also a Leo solution, but they went with the one where they could charge for it.
Huh.
Because they're an ultra low cost carrier, and if you put something on the plane, it's got to make money. It's got to, you know, cover its own costs.
Do you think that Wiz looked at it and said, we can become a more attractive option within Europe, like point to point, because of having this?
That's all they fly, so sure.
I mean, they fly some long routes on 319s and or 320s, whatever they have now.
Yeah, the 321s. They flew some stuff down to the Middle East. They've mostly they closed the Abu Dhabi base, right? So, yeah, they fly longer stuff in some areas, but it is, at this point, basically just, you know, flying anywhere they can in around Europe. So, do they think it's going to help them sell more tickets? Obviously, but I don't know what the model is there. So that one's it's a hard one for me to sort.
Maybe they have a per flight code that you have to enter and you pay for the code or something like that.
By design, historically, contractually, Starlink won't allow that.
So there's no way to like put up a paywall. It just, it's on and it's in your plane.
Yeah, the closest they've gotten, or the most that Starlink has been willing to give up, is that you can have a frequent flyer requirement. And that's what, you know, United does. You have to have a frequent flyer account, but the account has to be able to be had for free.
Yeah, okay.
And BA is doing, basically, I shouldn't say everybody, because not everybody is, but it's either wide open free or a number of, almost all of the more recent signups, contracts, the airlines are doing it with a frequent flyer account. I've reached out to Wizz Air. They never got back to me, but they haven't explained how they're going to do it because they don't really have a frequent flyer program.
Maybe that's what they're doing. Go ahead, Foss.
Oh, well, I mean, they already charge for bags, so now they're just going to start charging for devices.
If you want to bring your cell phone on board, it costs money, but whether you spend free once you get on board to connect to the internet?
Yeah.
I like the way you think.
How many laptops are in your bag? That's an iPad. That's three devices, sir. You got to put one in your check luggage.
Wait, you can't put it in your check luggage. You can put it in the donation bin over there.
Yeah. Straight to our employees. Yeah. Here, sign this.
Here, could you write your password on this and put it on top?
Oh, man. We'll ship it to you.
Yeah, so that was happening. Then El Al is also switching over. They're a Viasat customer right now and are moving over to Starlink. So that's another interesting one to me. Again, obviously they think there's a different business model and plan here that's going to work. I think from the Viasat perspective, Viasat had been talking about, you know, we've got two new satellites that just went into orbit. The first one's actually supposed to be online imminently for airlines. The second one will be online soon, but is also, you know, doing orbit raising, whatever. And like kind of massive capacity in the Americas and in Asia. And LL's flights are mostly Europe and Europe to North America, where, interestingly, the new satellites don't actually add a ton of capacity. So it's unclear to me if that's sort of why LL was like, we waited, you didn't actually boost our networks enough, so it's just not going to work.
Yeah. What about just the idea that Amazon Leo is not a viable option in general right now? Like, is like,
I mean, it's not right now because the satellites aren't in orbit yet. Yeah. But they did get an extension on the deadline they had to have satellites in orbit to be able to maintain their priority for the spectrum.
Yep.
Which is a whole sort of regulatory thing. But the short version is, if they didn't do that, other people would be able to use that same spectrum, and it would be very bad for Amazon. And they sort of defended themselves there. They had that rocket blow up a couple weeks ago now, a New Glenn. So getting to launch the satellites themselves is still going to take some time. But they've got SpaceX contracts. They've got ESA contracts launching out of French Guiana. So they're getting them into orbit, 25 to 30 at a time. When you're trying to get to, 3,000 or whatever the number is, that's a lot of launches, but they're getting there.
So here's a question, right? Like, there's a ton of space junk, and maybe you don't know the answer to this. There's a ton of space junk in low Earth orbit. There's also satellites now that we're using for communications. Yeah. At what point, like, is it become problematic to launch? I mean, I guess you know where everything is. Like, most of the stuff is mapped, right?
Right.
At what point does this become problematic, though, for launching actual people into space?
For launching, less of an issue, I think. For, for like people, also, we don't put people into space very often, so it's okay. What's interesting to me is the sort of, there are databases/maps of where everything is and where it's going and how fast it's moving and all that stuff. And so trying to track, where and when things are going to be, and you have different orbital planes and different pathways. So imagine something, two hula hoops spinning in circles with the common center point. At some point, like, the balls on them might actually be in the same place.
Yeah.
And that's not good. And so it's a conjunction, I think is what those are called, incident. And so there's massive math that goes into avoiding conjunctions. And historically it was done manually and it was fine. And as part of SpaceX's constellation, they made a lot of it automated and, math. Like, do the math. If you see, where all the things, tell the system it knows where all the things are, if something's going to move, like, create rules of avoidance and let the math just sort of automate how that all that works. And so far it's working. A little bit of Hunt for Red October. I could fly a plane in the dark. Yeah, if the map is good enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of like the idea of, like, not falling out of orbit either, because,
yes,
space is just falling perpetually.
That is a thing. And, like, every now and then there's a failure and something deorbits, uncontrolled, or has a fuel tank explode or whatever else. Then you got to deal with, like, okay, what other stuff is around it? And is anything else going to pass through that debris field soon? And how quickly will that debris field dissipate and all that other stuff?
Yeah. It's super interesting.
Back to the point of, is it viable in Delta's position here? I actually was talking with a buddy up here who works for them, not in this department at all, but, like, he's mad because he wants the good internet on board today instead of waiting 2 years. And I get it. At the same time, I think there are options other than SpaceX. It's a matter of timing and how much are you willing to wait and how good will these other systems be in the interim. I also know that Amazon's approach is more than just, here's internet, have fun. It's, here's internet and you're backhauled into our data centers and into our private network already. So, you wanted Amazon Prime content on board? Turns out that's, a different price point because there's no egress fees, right? Everything's on our network.
Yep.
And stuff like that. So there are more. But
at the same time, SpaceX could very easily set up peering agreements with Netflix, HBO, any other provider out there.
Right. Amazon.
Pay for it.
Peering generally, a lot of people don't pay for peering because they view it as mutually beneficial.
Right.
Explain what peering is, so for the listeners that don't know.
Peering is when two entities connect together by choice, at a network level.
Yeah. Internet, there's massive interconnect points where sort of everybody can play, and it's a public crossing, if you will. And then there's private ones, which are these peerings that Paz is talking about.
Yeah, and there's also peering in some of these public places, right? They're called network access points, NAPs. So, you know, you have these giant NAPs where, like, as an example, Comcast goes into a bunch of NAPs and they sign peering agreements in those NAPs as well as outside of those NAPs because they have so much traffic going to Netflix, HBO, and stuff.
Sure.
Rather than shoving it all the way back onto the public internet and coming back, because that creates a negative experience for their users, as well as increases their costs because they're pushing traffic out to the regular internet.
Yeah. I get it. Yes, you could have this pairing, but there's still, I mean, cost to build it out, even if there's not a charge to do it. And, to, you know, for a pairing, for bandwidth, whatever. Like, it's the idea that, and Amazon is not alone in this approach, but the idea that there's more to a service provider than just here's the pipe is not a new one, and how it will play for Delta longer term versus anyone else be interesting.
I think one of the things that comes to mind for me is, like, Starlink is here today. Amazon Leo won't be here for 2 years.
Right.
And when Leo launches, will it be like Starlink is today, or will it have evolved? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, Starlink has 2 years to now innovate while they continue to deliver this product. So they could increase bandwidth, they could reduce latency, any number of different things, yeah. Things as well as improving the onboard kits, right? I think that's the biggest challenge that Amazon's going to have, is we all know that these kits, when they first came out, were not super reliable on any platform. Yes. And over time, they get refined and better. So I don't think Delta's going to have reliable high-speed internet in 2 years. I think it's going to be 4 years, because mm-hmm. it's going to take years for that kit to stabilize. And, like, you'll have real-world results, right? Not just testing and results.
Yeah, no, that is a very real risk. I mean, I know a bunch of the guys there, and I can't vouch for it's going to, like, they're not going to have the same problems everybody else has. They know about those problems. They know what the challenges are there. So I know they are working to address them and engineer to be there, you know, when the time comes. They're not building Wi-Fi 4 hotspots today, right? They're definitely building the newer ones. The antenna that they're building will be at the capacity of, you know, what is reasonable for the bandwidth, et cetera. They want, in theory, again, have to be in real world testing, but they are building to that target rather than building to last year's target or even a today target.
Right.
So we'll see. It is a interesting challenge. And also, you know, that I think Delta will argue a little bit of that Viasat going with who is their main provider. With the new satellite now covering the Americas, Viasat has sort of promised they're going to open the tap, go from garden hose to fire hose here real fast in terms of available bandwidth. And latency will be a problem still, because, you know, speed of light hasn't changed and neither has the distance to the satellites. But they think that they actually have a quote from the guy from Viasat, which is an interesting one, which is effectively when Gogo was the original provider, and then Viasat launched, and Viasat was the upstart competitor. Viasat's latency was way higher, but performance was way better than on Gogo. And it's because they had more bandwidth available. And there are some things that are very specifically latency sensitive, but not everything. And Viasat has had to dial down how much bandwidth is available because they didn't have enough satellite capacity. And now that they're going to sort of open the, you know, floodgates or the fire hose again, they are reasonably confident that even with the latency not dropping, just being able to put massively more amounts of bandwidth on any given airplane will be enough to make people happy with their performance. I'm skeptical of that, but that's one of the things they've said, and we're going to see how that goes.
Time will tell.
Yep.
United, some issues with their new 787s with the new Polaris seats. One of them is kind of is back at the shop at Boeing to have some problems worked out.
Yeah, like this is 101, which was the first Polaris with the new config, a new first 79 with the new Polaris config. And it did the outbound, then the return from Singapore canceled, then it did a flight to London, and the flight from London canceled. Like, and both times they had to ferry it back. So it's been a problem child from the beginning. And at this point, it after sitting around for a few weeks, they flew it to Moses Lake yesterday, on Saturday. And this reminds me a lot of Americans' first 7, 8, 9 with their premium config last year, which was having all sorts of weird cancellations and what have you. And I believe this is the same plane that that Reddit post with the flood references.
Like where the water in the bathrooms, like, yeah, it overflowed.
We're like coming out of the sidewall or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, where they took the sidewall off and they still couldn't figure out what it was, where it was coming from.
Oh, interesting. I mean, this plane's like been going to Singapore and then canceling or delaying, and then 3 days later it'll finally make the flight back. And it's causing, I think it's causing just a lot of problems operationally for them. So I wonder why it's just one plane though. Don't they have multiples of these?
They do, but I mean, maybe this is the worst offender.
Or maybe they're going to go through all of them, but this is the one that they want to get in first. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like Boeing called Lemon Law, not Boeing, United called Lemon Law in this.
Said, so, take it back.
Take it back. We want our money.
Man, that sucks. Project Sunrise. Seth, did you put this in here?
I did.
You did? What's the story here?
Well, I mean, Qantas has slowly been releasing more details at Sunrise. And some of the things that popped out is they reduced the committed pitch in economy. So it'll be cramper than they said. Some of the projections have them flying northeast out of Sydney, over Alaska, and over the North Pole to London.
This is my favorite part. They're planning a North Pole route. And they had there's an interview floating around on Instagram that I have a link to with a pilot talking about it. And it's like, you know, we've got the new software that's helped us optimize flight planning. And it's, you know, analyze the winds and the weather forecasts and everything else for, you know, the duration of the flight to try to pick what's the best route to go. And there are scenarios during the northern winter season where the jet stream is pushing so strong that a polar route from Sydney delivering a northern arrival over Scotland into London will be the most efficient. And all I can say to that is the Earth, this must be a really weird shape.
The Earth is a very weird shape. I wish there was a way to map that effectively.
Like what the flight path looks like?
Yeah, because like, you know, the Japan to Europe flights typically like thread the needle up through Alaska and then go over the North Pole to wherever their destination is in Europe. So that I can see. But like doing it over the Pacific,
basically just that. You fly to Japan and then you just keep going.
I mean, it's a lot like the New York to Singapore flights, right? They generally just go east.
Yeah, true.
It's strong enough, yeah.
I mean, the thing I wonder about is like, does this also have to do with they're not operationally confident in airspace going westbound?
I mean, it's possible, but they're definitely going to have more headwinds going west.
True. Yeah.
Right. So, and then the other thing, they quietly dropped Melbourne from their plans. It's just Sydney.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the rumor that they were going to do at Melbourne? Just Heathrow or Heathrow and JFK?
I'm not sure. I think maybe it was just Heathrow, but yeah, now it's just Sydney JFK and Sydney London.
And London will be first.
Interesting. And then it's going to start in October 2027. That's the plan?
That's the current plan. We talked a couple weeks ago about how, you know, aircraft delivery was delayed and whatnot. And then like a couple days later, Airbus went out and put it on a first flight. So, there's also, I think they had some folks out to Toulouse to tour sort of cabin mock-ups and stuff like that. First class cabin or first class suites, 6 seats in a 111 setup, and it's both a chair and a bed. So decent amount of space for your 20 hours on board.
10,000 something odd. What is it? 10,573 miles from Sydney to London Heathrow if they go the westbound route. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think we'll be able to find reward space on this, Foz?
If you can't find Perth to Heathrow, you're not going to find space.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
No, I think that's good.
Sweet. All right. For our Patreon subscribers, we're going to talk a little bit about United's XLRs and some changes there. New drinks for Alaska and WestJet and, KLM with some, A350s with an interesting twist on them. Alaska cutting some leisure routes and a nerd route. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon supporter. If not, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
I have one more thing.
Oh, crap.
Steve Jobs.
Sorry. Just one more thing. Just a reminder that the three of us are going to be at the Points Travel Festival Portland 2026 on July 31st, August 1st, that weekend in Portland, Oregon. Drinking beer with Steven, and I guess some of you will probably drink coffee with Steven too, but I won't. And you should come hang out with us, and we will see you there.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.